Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Gear 30 on the Blister Podcast Network. As you can tell, it's not Jonathan Ellsworth and it's not Luke Coppa. You're here with Kara Williard, and you can check out everything we are doing and reviewing over at blisterreview.com. I am recording this from the Blake Hotel at Taos Ski Valley, where we just spent the last several days skiing with, well, most of the Blister team, including Luke, Jonathan, Kristen, and Justin Bob. And for those that don't know, Blister started right here at Taos 13 years ago. It happens to be where Jonathan, Kristen, and myself all came together, and it's a mountain that we all love a whole lot. So, for this episode, Jonathan, Luke, Kristen, and myself talk a lot about the mountain and how, in our minds, it compares to our now home mountain of Crested Butte Mountain Resort. We discuss some of Luke's interesting methods of fueling himself for several long days of skiing, and we, of course, are going to talk about gear. For those that would rather skip along to the gear portion of this episode, check out our topics and times in the show notes of this episode. For this trip, we brought 42 skis along and have been skiing very long days, so we have plenty to say, including an upcoming flash reviews, which are available to our Blister Plus members. You can also stay tuned for Jonathan's recent crashes and close calls story to remind you why we are so passionate about our Blister Plus membership with corresponding injury insurance. It's been a really fun week of skiing Taos with the Blister team, and it's been awesome to get back to the mountain where it all started, and a mountain that has some truly amazing terrain. Before we get going, this episode of Gear 30 is brought to you by Powder Hound, which is our Blister-recommended shop in Girdwood, Alaska. It's been an amazing winter in Alaska, and spring is shaping up to be great, too. Powder Hound Ski and Bike is still stocked up with a bunch of this year's goods. Whether it's a new POW ski or a ski to tear up those firm mornings of spring, they will be sure to get you dialed. Spring sales are going strong, so get the goods while you can. Not only is ski season still in full swing with plenty of snow, but bikes and summer gear are arriving daily. If you put off getting that new bike last year, don't wait through another summer without getting the new bike that you've been dreaming of. Head down to Alaska's only ski-in and ski-out shop at the base of Alyeska Resort. Say hi to their crew and ask them what they've been skiing on this season, and they will steer you in the right direction. I am also excited to say that I am headed to Girdwood next week to hang out with my fiancé, Zach, who happens to be working up there, and I will definitely be stopping in to say hey to Lindsay and Eric and all of our friends at Powder Hound. So, see you guys soon. And with that, let's get right into my conversation with Jonathan, Kristen, and Luke. Here we go.
All right. Well, I am very happy to be here in room number 319 of the Blake Hotel in Taos Ski Valley. There's been a bit of a reunion here. My first time here in about 6 years. And I'm here with Luke Coppa, Kristen Sinnott, and Kara Williard. We're very sad to say that Justin Bob, who we had a wonderful day riding with, J-Bob had to sprint back home, you know, to help with the children, which we applaud that sort of thing. But to be honest, we don't, because we would much rather have him here with us right now. But it was a fantastic day of doing one of my favorite things in the world, which is getting to watch Justin Bob. You could sort of say attack Taos Ski Valley or put his creative spin on this mountain. Kristen, how would you describe this?
I think attack's the wrong word for J-Bob because I don't think he could ever attack anything. Those negative connotations. He will completely, I don't know what the other word is. Like, he crushed the mountain in a very gentle way. Nice. That's what I'm saying, because he's so nice. Like,
he might be nice, but he attacks. There's a lot of reckless abandon. There's a lot of reckless abandon in J-Bob's riding.
I think there's a lot of optimism in J-Bob's riding.
There is a lot of optimism in J-Bob's riding.
There's never a lot of clarification about what the landing looks like.
Is actually one of the things I love most about J-Bob. We were shooting a number of photos today, and this was an ongoing topic over the last several days. Let's say some of us were on team, let's just be a bit looser with, like, I'm going to go over there to shoot that. Others in our group are a lot, like to get a lot more specific. The way it would go with J-Bob is, you know, Luke, or if Kara had the camera, or Kristen, the person would like give some very, very specific notes about where he or she wanted J-Bob to go. And he'd be like, And then he would absolutely just go do whatever he felt like.
Well, not whatever he felt like. He would just send whatever was nearby.
Instead of a turn, he was just going to air off whatever you just told him to turn on.
Yeah. So anyway, J-Bob, mostly we miss you. We're recording this Wednesday evening at 8:15 p.m. Mountain Time. We're going to see J-Bob tomorrow morning back here in Taos. So excited for that. And that's what's been going on. But first of all, I've been thinking about this trip a lot this season. And this place means a whole lot to me. And I really wondered what it would be like after 6 seasons away coming back, you know, getting to know more of the nooks and crannies of Crested Butte. And we love that mountain. But man, I used to love this mountain. And I was like, what? How will I feel? And I think, well, I'll just speak for myself. turns out, still absolutely love this mountain. So that has held true. And interestingly, I was actually talking to Emma Patterson, who grew up in Taos, but then has also spent some time in Crested Butte. And I told her this exact same thing, that I was like, I've been thinking a lot, like, what would these comparisons be like and the rest? And Emma was like, I don't really feel like they're that comparable. And I've never said that before, because it's like, okay, they have really good steeps, both places. In those steeps, you can get into some of the best, or at least some of my favorite technical skiing in the United States. And yet, I kind of think Emma's right. And I don't think I can articulate this. I will give you the opportunity to, if you can spell this out. But I think after 3 full days of skiing here, that is kind of, I'm not that inclined to be like, yeah, Taos, Crested Butte, kind of the same mountain. Thoughts, Kristen?
Yeah, it makes me think of like those highlight magazines where it's like, find the similarities, find the differences. And there are some like glaring similarities, like the steeps. I think the culture is different in New Mexico, but there's also like that small town feel here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a lot of differences in it too, like being able to lap things, like whether the pitches end in an apron versus like tight trees or mm-hmm. anything like that, and whether you can see the technical terrain and everything like that. I still think I still like to compare them, because I think if you compare it to like a Sun Valley, there's far fewer similarities in those two
that's
mountains.
Fair.
But yeah, there's definitely a lot of differences.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the similarities are kind of obvious as far as like steep terrain, lots of rocks, and snow conditions tend to be fairly similar, especially when it gets into that like chalk cycle and everything else. There's a lot of moguls at both mountains. I grew up skiing Taos, and of course it was like, there's a lot of moguls there, a lot of moguls at Crested Butte. But I feel like the main distinction is that Taos really gives you one option for fall line. Like, you really just know exactly where the fall line is, and you just kind of take that line each and every time.
Huh.
Whereas Crested Butte, there's a lot more options. You can kind of traverse to a lot of different fall lines, and that kind of makes Crested Butte in a way like more intricate. It's harder to kind of see the zones and see the mountain, especially like where the technical terrain is. Whereas like at Taos, you get to really study Kachina Peak. Mm-hmm. You get to study West Basin every time you're on chair two. But there is some, there's some great similarities. But then also like every time I return to Taos and I kind of see what the differences are, I remember why I love Taos for its own reasons, including, as Kristen mentioned, the culture.
Luke?
I mean, I think saying they're not comparable would very much disagree with that, as someone who did not grow up skiing Taos, did not grow up skiing CB, but did ski a lot of the mountains in Colorado. They're way more similar than anything else I've skied in the Rockies, than different at least. But I do, it's nice to be able to kind of check out the zones that you're skiing. And I think there is a level of intuitiveness here where, like you're saying, like usually there's one fall line choice. Pretty obvious, whereas CB definitely has like a bit of like, you can get yourself into trouble if you don't know where you're going.
There's just like almost a dozen variations on any line that you could take, and some of those variations, as you just said, can put you in some places that you might not want to. Mm-hmm. And granted, people, we're not talking about like if you're sticking to groomers or something, but once you start getting into those steeps, there's, I think what you're saying, Luke, is there are more options off of lines than maybe, I mean, I don't know if that's totally true.
Yeah, it's more just like the main line is pretty obvious. Mm-hmm. And like I had only skied here, I think twice before this trip. And that was all before I'd spent 5.5 seasons in CB. So I was hoping that knowing that they are fairly similar in terms of being known for their steeps and tech. And turns out I very much enjoyed being here again, having become more accustomed to skiing steep stuff and hopping around rocks and not being freaked out about that in the slightest at this point. It was a lot more fun. And yeah, it's a very cool mountain. And I think it's mostly the whole time I was thinking like, man, if I spent a season here, I would be able to figure out like a lot of the different lines, especially on Kachina, because Jonathan didn't allow us to ski Kachina last time I was here. So like, oh, there's so much terrain here that I have no idea about at all. But I remembered West Basin very quickly and got a feel for that. Yeah, pretty instantly.
Well, that's probably a good segue to what I have titled here, The Big Debate. And we're just going to call this The Big Debate, Chair 2 versus Chair 12. And this has been a pretty heated topic over our first 3 days here. Chair 2 at Taos is the chair that leads you up to West Basin, which I have very, very, very strong feelings about. Chair 12 is the chairlift that takes you up Kachina Peak. And I don't know if this is true for lots of people who ski here, but or anyone, but I'm very much team Chair 2. I love Chair 2. I have said, I don't know if I've ever said on a Gear 30 podcast, I could be pretty happy just lapping Chair 2 the rest of my life. And then there are other people who really, really appreciate Chair 12. Kristen is one of those people.
So Jonathan left fairly soon after Chair 12 was installed. And I think a lot of us, when they announced that they were actually putting a chairlift up there, the locals were against it, to say it nicely. It's like, it's our pristine peak. It looks beautiful. Like, we get our powder turns on there. Like, don't hurt it. And then, so I just, this is my first season in 17 seasons that I have not had a Taos pass. This is my first time back since I moved away. And over those years that Chair 12 has been there, I've grown to love it. And it's one of those, like, you go there when it's right. Like, if there's been, especially in the spring, if there's been a time when it's like Stauffenberg and West Basin is actually has gotten soft and then is refrozen, Kachina's just that much higher that it softens up sooner, or you don't even have to let it soften up. So I think I like to play kind of the weather more than have a side. Like, I am not anti Chair 12. I'm pretty open-minded in general, especially compared to other people in this room. So I've grown to really like it, and the fact that you can lap it so easily. I mean, I only have so many laps I can do on West Basin and Highline. Like, that's, you have to hike, and it can be exhausting. And if you want to be out there all the time, I also, in the last 5 years, got to ski half days because of my son. So it was nice to, like, you get up to Chair 12 and you can get a bunch of laps, and then you go over to West Basin after Chair 12 closes, and then it's great. So that's my long story of how I like both of them.
So you're more of a Christmas person than a red versus green chili person.
Oh, that's just a great analogy.
That
actually,
that's a very good question, and you guys don't know this answer, but you will understand it. I am a red chili person.
Yeah,
because you can never know what's in the green chili in some places, because some places put onions in their green chili.
Oh, no.
And I disagree with that. So I know that they'll at least blend the onions in the red chili.
Now I need to find out what the skiing equivalent to onions is for Kristen.
Oh my God.
Kristen hates onions, for reference.
All right, Kara, we've had some very heated conversations on this topic. So the mic is yours. Your thoughts on the Chair 12 versus Chair 2.
Yeah, I mean, similar to Kristen, for me, it's not either or. I think when I first moved here, I was in the frame of mind, like similar to a lot of locals, that putting a lift up Kachina was controversial. Prior to that, it required a 45-minute hike, and it was kind of like your tribute to get up to Kachina. That's the time you would give, and it was always worth it. But these days, I mean, I think of my favorite terrain in all of, at least what I've skied, North America, West Basin is still my favorite. I love lapping West Basin. But I think the lift has offered a whole new perspective on Kachina. You used to get up there, you'd have one line, you just hiked for 45 minutes. You don't want to blow that line. You'd often stick to like pretty familiar terrain. And more often than not, it was powder, because that's kind of why you would make the hike to Kachina. But then once the lift was in, and I spent several seasons at Taos with the lift in, it just became a whole new face to me, because I got to explore. I got to kind of venture out into every nook and cranny that I was oftentimes like not willing to go to. And I just really became more like accustomed to skiing Kachina Peak. And now, like Kristen said, it's very condition dependent, but when Kachina is either chalky or it gets this spectacular wind buff, I think there's just like nothing comparable than like beautiful spring laps on Kachina. Each line, you get to choose a new little, you know, you make one slight deviation from the line you did previously, and it feels like a whole new zone. And I think over time, I've just really fallen in love with that lift. And the last few springs when I've come back to Taos, I've just ended up lapping Kachina as much as I could, because like chalk, wind buff, exploring, all of those things just lead to some really fun days. When you think about lift service terrain, Kachina has something really special to offer. It gets you up to over 12,400 feet. You probably get about 1,500 feet of vertical relief in each run you make. And just being able to get up there via lift is pretty spectacular. But for those who are still like diehard, I'm going to make the hike, Taos Ski Valley does offer that post-storm cycle. You can still have a couple days of hiking before they open the lift. So that's also a unique way to kind of get out there and explore.
Yeah, you can also still, like, if you want to hike it, you can still hike it right now.
Well, to be clear, I actually was never like anti putting a lift on Kachina. Mm-hmm. That was part of Ernie Blake's vision for this place, right? And so that's not where I'm coming from on this. I just, if we're getting into the, which, if you get one, if you only got chair 12, or that's how I'm more approaching it, right? If you only got one, chair 12 or chair 2, I'm taking 2.
But you didn't approach it that way day 1, 2, or 3 here. Because you didn't have the one, like we gave you both options that we could do.
And I didn't want to go to one of them. To me, I mean, I've said for years, Zdarsky is just one of my absolute favorite runs. I don't have that. Oh, this is my abs. This is like a therapy session for me right now, by the way. So this is one of those, it's like the gear therapy episodes, except we're talking about chairlifts. So thanks everybody for sticking with us here. We're going to get to the gear in a minute. But like, I don't have that. And maybe it is because I did, like I left for Crested Butte, like not long after the Kachina lift went in. So I don't have my favorite lines that, and I think you guys have made a good point about this, there is certainly a nostalgia about that. And there's just like, these are the zones that brought me as much joy skiing as like maybe any place anywhere in my entire life. That's West Basin for me. And yes, I did, you know, I hiked Kachina and loved those hikes. Like I said, I was never anti the lift going up there. And by the way, we skied some really good Kachina laps this trip already. But I'm just still, we talked about it today, right? I think we were standing around the tequila chutes. And I was like, Chris, I mean, the trees, like these steep chutes and these beautiful trees. And I'm like, Kristen, like the solitude right now, that is a little bit of a different experience. And I think those are the things, some of the reasons why. Anyway, I'm sorry. Sorry. Thanks for listening, everybody.
If we take it from favorite lift, chair 2 versus chair 12, or we take it to favorite run, Zdarsky all day. I know. And that is on West Basin.
You like you changed your tune from where you were on Monday.
That's not true.
It's true.
No. So for the record, on the very first chairlift ride, when Kara and I were up at 9 a.m. day one, and I guess you guys were like on your computer or something working.
Yeah, it's probably not important.
Yeah, not important stuff. I did ask Kara what she was most looking forward to skiing, and it was Zdarsky, so she didn't change her tune. But I will say one more thing about Kachina Lift, and one negative thing it did, in my opinion, very, very small, really, in the scheme of things. But in the past, because our group, we had a great group, still friends with all the Taos crew, but not everybody lives here still. You could always meet up with your friends because they were always lapping chair two in the afternoon. And now you can do that after 2:45 when the lift closes on Kachina, but it spreads out groups a little differently. And again, just the smallest thing like complaint, but it's really not a complaint because it's really fun to be on Kachina. So,
Luke, you've listened patiently through all of this. Any thoughts on this debate? Luke doesn't like to hike. I think that's where this is going to come
in. I have no problem with hiking.
It's
but
a really nice hike.
Never hiked Kachina before the lift was in. From my perspective, I think of it more like chair two is NFL at CB, where it's a bit more complicated terrain, but maybe more rewarding. And if I really want to like challenge myself, I can pick out different lines there. Whereas Kachina is kind of like the high lift, where I ski those lines all the time. They're more open. I kind of know where I'm going, and it's more consistent, but maybe not like as techy as tech gets. But it's also like this was my first trip ever skiing that terrain.
Yeah.
And so the whole time we were shooting photos on it, I was just like, well, I would probably only scratch the surface if I shot this over an entire season. Like, I think I would learn to like it a lot more as I figured out like, oh, which hits can you hit when it's snowed 2 inches versus 8 inches, or when the wind's been doing this or that. But yeah, I very much enjoyed being able to go there this trip and all the cool rocks that we got to take pictures of. That was cool too. But it was nice, like having actually skied West Basin before, it felt like very intuitive to just like, oh yeah, we skied this 6 years ago, but I know exactly what's at the end of this shoot and that one.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I would, the caveat I would add, I like your comparison. West Basin is the north face in Crested Butte, except we did not get into Dalbertines on Kachina, and that zone would. There's plenty of tech and mandatory errors. That would be, you would love to like explore that zone sometime. And not sure if this is the trip, but like that.
Just ask J-Bob. I'm sure he'd be able to do it tomorrow.
Yeah, same with the dog legs and stuff like that over at Hunzi.
Mostly it was just, I was looking at that and like, man, on a pow day. Because that's how I look at a lot of the NFL terrain. I'm like, I know what this is, but I know I don't want to hit it when there isn't fresh snow in the landing.
Yeah.
But there were, tons of options that would open up if it snows a bit.
All right. Well, everybody, thank you for basically listening to kind of a therapy session there. I think we're going to keep it moving. And I mean, the other thing to say, if people are like, I haven't been to Taos and I'm curious, and you all sound like weirdos right now, if you don't like the idea of hiking up, shouldering your skis, hiking, 10 minutes, if you're going quicker, you can do it in under 10, over into West Basin to get into some very steep technical terrain. We've solved your problem here. You should maybe not get on chair 12. It still is advanced terrain for sure. But if, there's a lot of people coming from sea level, this just could get to be a bit much. That would settle this issue of this whole West Basin versus Kachina thing. And frankly, I really am glad that the Kachina lift is there, because so many people getting on top of Kachina and getting to see those incredible views, it is a very special thing. That said, check yourself. Like, if you're not ready to handle some advanced terrain, take some lessons, get some instruction. Maybe it will be your next trip to get up there.
Yeah, Taos is a really good ski school too.
They do have really good ski school. Okay, moving on. Two things I want to touch on quickly. One of my actual favorite things of this trip is Luke's, what I'm calling Luke's 3-day-old burger.
36-hour burger, I think he called it on the chairlift.
That's not true.
I don't think my math is right.
That's not true. It's more like the 90-hour burger. So basically, Luke just continues to surprise in all kinds of ways. And he went in on Monday, bought a day-old green chili hamburger.
Cheeseburger.
He bought a day-old green chili cheeseburger because it was 50% off, but then kept it in our room.
And where in the room was this cheeseburger?
On the dresser.
No, it went in the fridge first. And then was on the dresser for a while.
Because there was no microwave in the room. So yeah. He wanted to warm it up.
And we were like, Luke, there's a microwave downstairs. And that he never microwaved it. And it was just like, I don't know, in the way that people might have a bag of chips, like in the room, he had this green chili cheeseburger in tinfoil just sitting out on our dresser. And he finally finished it this afternoon,
which is this morning.
Wednesday.
I watched him eat it for breakfast this morning and he said it was delicious.
Yeah.
Did you have it on the chairlift?
Yeah.
That's what for lunch.
You had it on the... Wait, yeah. You had it for breakfast and lunch?
Yeah, spaced it out.
to be fair, I think we've all done breakfast, lunch, burritos, but they're same day.
Yeah. So anyway, never seen anybody treat a burger like it was something you just sort of nibble on over the course of...
I saw how well done it was at first, and I was like, that's not going bad. There's no red to be found in that burger.
Anyway, so that was really an impressive thing. I do want to say my breakfast and lunch today actually came on behalf of an old Taos friend, a staple of Taos, JB, who I've known since before I started Blister. And when I did start Blister, JB always had the most supportive things in the world to say. And we were setting up to shoot a line. And this guy comes down and was like, kind of looking. And actually first he was like, are you Luke Coppa? Well, and he came up to Luke correctly. Right? Go ahead.
Well, we were talking about like technique for photos and stuff and talking about like how we approach, like we were shooting just groomers at the time. And so we were just talking about the details of that. And I thought he was just trying to get some advice and like picking up on that and like, oh, like, are you guys instructors or something? But no.
No, he was like, that's a familiar voice. And he came by and he said, are you Luke? And it looks like, yes. And they got talking. And then I'm like, I know that voice. And then I look and I'm like, JB? I'm like, it's Jonathan. And so then we reunite and talk for a while. It's unbelievably good to see him. And then just before we take off for me to go do a lap that Luke was about to shoot, or actually Kristen was about to shoot, I think, he's like, here. And he hands me this block of hazelnut chocolate.
Ritter chocolate. It was good.
And I was like, that's convenient because I haven't eaten anything today other than coffee. And so that ended up being my breakfast and basically my lunch as well. So JB, thanks for lunch. And it was great to see you.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Sounds like you could have used a pocket 36-hour burger.
I have to say, Luke also shared my breakfast burrito as a midday snack as well. Mm-hmm.
There's lots of sharing. The chili chocolate.
Oh, the chili chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Chili cherry chocolate.
Did we just end this gear 30 now, having talked about zero gear, but sharing stories? We're 30 minutes in.
I want to talk about groomers.
Okay. All right. So, my one last thing. Black Diamond Espresso, an absolute staple of an institution in Taos Ski Valley. This was really special for me too, because I used to hit up Black Diamond Espresso like crazy. But 6 years ago, And the 12 years prior to that, I was always getting Americanos. But now, with my super refined and sophisticated, you know, coffee developments, I love the espresso. And so this trip, Monday, was the first time I'd ever actually had just an espresso at Black Diamond Espresso, and have been punching those out as frequently as I can. And it's really, really nice. And I think, Kristen, you took a photo of J-Bob and me.
Yes,
enjoying.
Cheersing with your little cups.
Yeah, yeah.
And plates.
And plates. Plates. We were very fancy. So that was yet another. And that's the last like moment I'm going to share, I think, now. But
it's been a good trip.
It has been a good trip. And we've also done a lot of skiing and actually been on a lot of gear. And maybe we should talk about that now.
What's the name of the podcast?
I don't know. Kristen, you said you wanted to talk about groomers because that's what we've been doing, right? Starting with groomers.
Yeah. So this is kind of just a shout out to everybody that likes corduroy and groomers, because I think it often gets overlooked, especially with like hardcore skiers that love the steeps and stuff like that. And like, I'm not going to get up there till it warms up. But my husband and I used to do this all the time here before we had Lyndon. Like, we would get up here at 8:30, we would get on the lift at 9, and we'd head over to chair 7, and we would ski under chair 7, which is Maxi's and some of the other runs nearby, because the sun hits it right away and it's fresh corduroy and it's amazing. And I think our team has all very much enjoyed these morning laps. And then you wait for the steeper terrain to warm up just a little bit, but it's, I mean, we've gone bell to bell almost every day. It's been pretty amazing. And I think kind of not every mountain has this opportunity to get out there early and get some fun groomers. But just, yeah, don't overlook it because it's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was a big fan. I will very frequently try and catch the freshly groomed groomers at CB, but it's rare that, especially as the person who's doing a lot of the photography, that we can get nicely groomed and edgeable groomers that are also not full of people. Like, that was huge. And just being able to like confidently carve wherever you want and shoot really cool photos with cool early morning light, that was a blast. And yeah, I mean, we, like we always say, we're like, we're skiing at least a groomer or a part of a groomer basically every run.
Yeah.
But having the opportunity to focus on that, skiing it and shooting it, I very much enjoyed it. I'm very much looking forward to tomorrow morning, largely because that, especially that zone, was so much just nicer snow conditions than I expected for how warm it got the prior day and how early in the day it was. Like, I'm used to that being just like, it could be corduroy, but it could be essentially ice groomed into nice corduroy. And I think that's a lot of what we skied last time I was in Taos. Like, it was either ice corduroy or slush corduroy. And just, it was basically like it was midwinter and they had groomed over a fresh, like 4 inches, just pretty, pretty ideal. And I had a blast with that.
Yeah, So my son Lyndon, who's 5, we've been doing corduroy crew, and like we talk about eating corduroy for breakfast, and and it's really fun. Then we actually go home for breakfast after
and actually eat corduroy.
Yeah, yeah.
Pants.
Just a shout out to next year's Blister Summit. We're gonna have corduroy crews in the morning. Where it's like an 8:45 meetup. Get at the lift at 9, and we're gonna go tear up some corduroy for an hour. So I'm really looking forward to that too. But.
All right, who wants to start on the carving skis?
I can start. As of recording this morning, posted a flash review about this ski, but we've been skiing 2 versions of Fisher's new The Curve GT85. There's the standard one, which is yellow, and then the redefined version, which is, as they refer to it, a concept ski to showcase how they can reduce the environmental footprint of a ski, and they do that via a whole bunch of different ways, but skied the redefined version, which is kind of a browner color thanks to its flax fiber layers just below its top sheet, and then the standard version, same side cut, same radii, but really enjoyed both of them. They I think are just very good all around carving skis, especially for me and what I look to from that category. Like, they are capable of making very, very tight, high edge angle turns, but aren't really hooky or scary when you just want to like cruise at lower edge angles. All in all, big fan. I do want to test them on consistently very firm surfaces. Like, ironically, because we were able to find the very nice groomers on this trip, I didn't get a whole lot of like really hard to get an edge in groomers. And that's where I want to test them more. But especially for like people who like to make turns somewhere between slalom and true GS. And that's what I generally prefer if I'm on a carving specific ski. They just felt really intuitive, exciting, but not like scary as soon as you let off the gas or try and make any sort of different turn shape. So yeah, all in all, those were really, really fun options for carving all sorts of groomers.
Well, this morning I was on the Stokely Montero AR. And actually, I think, Luke, it's like the corduroy was so good that we actually need to find some like trickier, firmer, harder.
It's kind of like skiing all mountain skis in POW. Like, yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. But that said, I mean, one of the things I think there are so many good sort of dedicated piece to skis out there anymore that if a ski starts to demonstrate any weird, unpredictable behavior or like an odd flex pattern, I think the bar is high enough right now that ski's just disqualified. And because there's just too many good options, I think. And yeah, like we'd have to go into one of our full reviews to really tease out the differences of some of these things. But I was once again, Stokely Stormrider 102, Stokely Stormrider 95, and now the Stokely Montero AR, really nice skis. And, you know, we'll stop mentioning this, but for anybody who thinks, okay, Stokely, I think those are really demanding skis, you better be like really hardcore or something, that's just not been our experience at all on these three skis. I think they're quite accessible. They hold up quite nicely. They're quite intuitive. This Montero AR, it's a beautiful carver. But then, you know, when I would ski, really only skied some smaller moguls on it, and I'm not going to do the thing where we recommend this as an amazing mogul ski. I think it can be skied in moguls, but you better have your mogul technique really on point. Mm-hmm. And I think there are other like better tools for the job. Competition mogul skis are pretty straight. They don't have a lot of side cut in the way that many of the best carving skis do. And so let's just keep that in mind. But still, I never was in a situation today, even like, you know, just feathering turns, because that's something we look at too. And that can often be a tune issue, but feathering turns, nothing ever felt weird, grabby, unpredictable. Skiing switch a little bit, not for like just screwing around, seeing if I could find that element with the ski where it started to just get really weird or out of its element. I didn't find it. I didn't take it up West Basin, and I'm not going to. But you know, I think it was just yet another Stokely ski where it would be very easy to recommend to a whole bunch of people and really difficult to figure out who would come back and be like, I really dislike this ski. You know, it's like, okay, well then do you just like a dedicated slalom ski, you know, or you really prefer a recreational DH ski or GS ski, but the versatility of that thing was impressive.
Yeah. Versatility on piste.
Yes.
Yeah. Because that's the thing, is like the all mountain, all conditions designations get a little weird, yeah. But like that Montero AR, totally agree. Very intuitive, agreeable carving ski. It's part of their All Mountain Pieced collection. And I think that's a pretty good description of it. Like you, I don't have much interest in skiing it in bumps and steeps. But yeah, overall, like I had no complaints about that ski. I'm very curious to compare it to the Nordica Steadfast 85, which we also have here and we're going to be getting on tomorrow. But yeah, one of those, like if someone's looking for a pieced oriented carving ski for a variety of on piece conditions, very easy to recommend.
All right, before we throw it to Kara and Kristen, do you want to go real quick on any of the other carving skis that just we've been on this or you've been on this week?
So for reference, tomorrow we're going to get on the new Rossignol Arcade 88, the Kessley MX 84, the Steadfast 85. But today I skied the Kessley MX 88 more as an all mountain ski. And we've been talking a lot about how different brands and regions define these things. I wasn't super stoked when we decided to like go into actual West Basin that had been getting some sun, but not consistent sun. So it was like ultra variable spring conditions. But that ski did actually feel like an all mountain ski. It didn't feel like an all mountain ski that I would probably own because it is very directional, precise, traditional. It's 88 underfoot, but I made it down at least, like, and everyone was struggling a bit. And so that made me feel a little bit better. But yeah, it's a ski that like, if you are deliberate about getting the weight off its tails in very tight, big moguls and chalky snow and grabby, weird snow, it was honestly a lot better than I expected. And then ironically on piste, it wasn't as exciting as I expected. Like it still would hold an edge very well, especially making longer turns and putting more deliberate input into the ski. But it was a very far cry from like a slalom ski or even that Fisher Curve GT85, which has a much tighter side cut radii. But yeah, I don't know. It's like a precise, very fun carving ski for slightly larger turns that is totally capable off-piste if you are skiing it like it was meant to be skied and not like a super tail rockered all mountain ski.
So real quickly, I'm going to just mention, I've also been skiing the Vocal Peregrine 80 and 82. And this is kind of fun because it's like, why do this Vocal make a Peregrine 80 and 82? What are the differences? And the answer is right now, we don't know. And so we're just skiing these blind. And, you know, Luke and I are going to be sort of coming to have our assessments on these. My understanding is that they are different constructions. You know, usually when companies do something like this, one of them is going to be a bit more stout and burly than the other, yada, yada. And, but it's kind of fun to just come in blind because we don't know which is supposed to be which. And the only thing is I'll say so far, I don't find there to be a radical difference. Now, once we do go get on those firmer groomers, that's where these two skis might start to differentiate them more than the like kind of perfect hero groomers we've been skiing. But anyway, those are on our radar. They've actually been on our feet. And these are sort of replacement skis for the some of the Deacon skis, like the beloved Deacon skis.
Yeah, so Vocal did a similar thing with some of their Deacon skis where, yeah, it would maybe be a 2 mil waist difference between two models, but they kind of treated them as one was more attuned to more experienced skiers and the opposite for the other. We have a brand lineup video that we filmed with Vocal at the Blister Summit this year, which we will post as soon as we can talk about some of the other skis that we also talked about in that video, which I'm sure Gear 30 listeners will be interested in. But yeah, stay tuned to the Blister YouTube channel for that video. And yeah, we're planning on posting at least a flash review of probably a combo review of both of them in the near future.
Yeah. Okay. Everybody's like, oh my God, thank God. Can we please hear from Kara and Kristen? I think we're going to be moving now to sort of some more all mountain skis. What do you have for us?
Yeah. So through the duration of the trip, we've encountered a pretty wide range of conditions. Everything from, I mean, we got here post 10-inch storm. Kristen and I got out at 9 a.m. Monday morning on some pretty narrow, narrower all mountain skis. But that's also, you know, we've seen everything from like super slushy moguls to refrozen crud to soft chop to excellent chalk. So it has been some truly great testing conditions. Mm-hmm. To speak a bit to the narrower all mountain category, the first morning, Kristen and I jumped on, I was on the K2 Mindbender 89 Ti in a 170 centimeter. And as Gear 30 listeners know, we've spent a ton of time on the K2 Mindbender 99 Ti, both on the men and women's side, but this was actually my first time on the 89 Ti. And we kind of started on some groomers and then we quickly jumped over to West Basin. That ski is super precise. It's stable. It's not quite as nimble as the 99 Ti, and I've had to work a bit to really drive it on edge to feel like I can kind of like access a little bit better, more of like the turn shape that it wants versus like kind of slarving it and skidding it around. But I've also really enjoyed it on piste. It's been an excellent groomer ski. And again, we've been skiing some great groomer conditions, so we'll see once it gets a little bit more refrozen. And then Kristen can probably speak to the narrower ski she was on that morning as well.
Yeah, so I was on the Salomon QST Lux 92 in a 168, and I'm a big fan of the narrow skis. So, I mean, we were chomping at the bit. Kara and I got on Porcupine right off the bat. It's one of my favorite first run groomers that I historically would take a new ski on, and it was pristine. It was soft. It was just like what we'd been skiing under Chair 7 in the most recent days. Just perfect. We were like giddy skiing down it. And the ski, you know, was, it's super easy to initiate the turn, short, large radius. Everything was just wonderful with it on that groomer. So we're like, we should probably go back up and then do Chair 2. Cause again, we haven't been here. And like, well, let's go check out Reforma. And it had not been skied off. We had big pockets of powder and it was like, okay, well, maybe my legs just aren't ready for this. And well, you know, the tips feel, felt a little softer and they got kind of pushed around with this heavier, not heavy powder, but, more powder than I expected for these narrower skis. And so we got down the bottom, like, well, that was a little challenging, but you know, let's go up. We'll hike West Basin now. And so we went up and skied Stoffy after that. And same scenario. They were fun. They didn't require like the precise turn that I think, the K2 Mindbender 89 Ti required. I could, slide the turns, easily pivot and everything like that. But that it felt like a stiffer tail, a softer tip, just got pushed around a lot and had to really stay on top of them. But it was also like, yeah, it's not quite the conditions for it. I do look forward to getting them on some chalk. I haven't been back on them since the mountains got skied off a little, but it was still really fun. I think we came down and we're like, you guys got to get out here right now.
Yeah.
We're going to switch skis up.
Yeah, man, I feel really bad about still being working at that point.
Basically, Luke and I do the work around here. Kara and Kristen just get to go ski all the hero groomers. No.
I think that's what I signed up for.
Smart. All right. Well, we're already like over 50 minutes deep into this conversation because, you know, we started with my therapy session. Again, thanks to all of you for that. Maybe what we do, we have a lot of product to talk about, but I think what we're going to do is maybe we sort of focus more on one more ski each, kind of one more all mountain ski. Is everybody agreeable to that?
Yeah. And for clarification, for those who don't watch our Instagram stories, we brought 42 skis to Taos for 4 days of testing.
We maybe should talk about that fact, Kristen.
And I just want to give a shout out to Mateo.
Mateo
at the Blake. We rolled in again with 42 pairs of skis. Most of them were in my truck. And Mateo met us there at 8:30 p.m. and they got them into the valet. And it
the
is
ski valet the at ski, the Blake.
The ski valet at the Blake. They unloaded it. They unloaded our bags. I mean, we brought multiple boots, multiple helmets, different ski kits. Like, we were not packing light. We had two vehicles. and they unloaded it Sunday night. The next morning, we wake up, walk downstairs, and we have two full racks of skis, and they're out there waiting for us, like 50 yards from the chairlift, if that. It's incredible, just the ski in, ski out capabilities here. And like the warm locker room is amazing, how the proximity and the staff and everything has just been so wonderful here. We're really spoiled. So I assume that when we go back to Crested Butte, there will be somebody waiting outside holding my skis and my boots will be really warm. And yeah, it's going to be great.
That'll be Luke. Yeah, no, I mean, first of all, yeah, 42 pairs of skis. Frankly, I mean, for our case where we are trying to be as efficient as possible, and we are skiing, like today was 9 a.m. to by the time we caught the last lap possible to get up West Basin, and I think we were down around 4:15, 4:20. So this is like very full days. And to be able, if you're like, okay, I'm coming to Taos Ski Valley, and maybe I'm coming with kids, or I'm coming with several skis or a bunch of friends, and I just want the most convenient, fastest, you know, like fastest to the chairlift's place to stay, there is one answer. There just is one answer, and that's the Blake. So anyway, that's that. Also, thanks again, Mateo. Okay, skis. Let's go.
Sure. I'm going to talk about the DPS Whaler 100, which from the summit, this past February, I've been skiing quite a bit and will be publishing a flash review soon. And I've been spending time on the 185 centimeter and have really enjoyed that ski, especially when conditions are veering on the side of slightly softish, grippy, consistent, chalky, which we've gotten a lot of this week. I spent all afternoon today on that ski. And I mean, for a directional skier, it's just felt super intuitive. Like I can drive the shovels a little bit, but it's also very nimble, very surfy, extremely maneuverable, especially in the very tight terrain, such as we've mentioned at West Basin. And it's also a great ski when like conditions are a little bit, well, especially when things have like softened up and we're skiing slush, or like when we're getting into a little bit of soft chop. So yeah, that's a ski that I've really been enjoying, and stay tuned for more on that.
And in the meantime, you can check out our brand lineup video from the Blister Summit on the Blister YouTube channel with DPS skis.
There you go. Kristen?
So yes, we've been on a lot of different skis, and trying to think of which one to talk about as my last ski on this Gear 30, but I'm going to go with the Zag Harfang 96. It's a ski that I've spent a bit of time on, and I most recently was skiing it in Crested Butte. I'm still not as familiar with the terrain in Crested Butte, so I'm a little bit more hesitant on some of the turns, especially in steeps. And so I was excited to get it back here, and we spent a lot of time on Kachina yesterday. And it felt much more intuitive. Like I wasn't kind of getting nervous, and instinctively I kind of go into the back seat, which is completely the opposite of what I should be doing.
But also the same as what most people do.
Yeah. 100% of people do when they're nervous on skis.
Yeah. So I was able to, you know, be in a better stance, a little bit more forward, aggressive stance. And on the chalk on Kachina, same with like, I know it performs really well, at least for me on groomers, but on the chalk of Kachina and some softer snow, it was really fun being able to just kind of slide some of those turns, but also make some precise turns. And it felt really good. So I was excited to have that kind of my mind in the right place while I was on that ski. Felt good.
Yeah. And we should have a full review coming out soon. We've had both Kristen and Kara have been skiing the shorter length we have, and Jonathan and I have been skiing the longer length. So stay tuned.
Oh my God, I want to speak to that ski so badly, but I'm going to bite my tongue for now. You want to go, Luke?
What do you want to talk about? And then I'll decide.
I was going to cheat.
Okay.
So you go and I'll... Yeah, you go first.
All right. Well, I'm going to cheat as well.
Suck.
Yeah. Quick shout out to the Zag Mata TI.
Oh.
It's their kind of like fun carver, tight radius, all mountain ski. I en- long story short, I enjoyed it a lot more than I expected to this afternoon when we did not ski a lot of groomers.
No.
My short take is that it's not as exhilarating of a carver as you might expect, looking at its radius and its kind of funny looking shape, but it is a lot more versatile of an all mountain ski than I expected. So we'll have more to say about that. I think when we publish this, I will be publishing a flash review of that ski a day or two after this. Getting back to the more traditional all mountain skis we've
been on. Can we just say on that ski, that's definitely the wildest looking ski we have with us, right?
That we have with us here. Yeah.
I think it looks really cool.
Yeah. It's got cool. Asymmetrical tips and tails that are not, it doesn't have an asymmetrical side cut, but it does very much stand out. I think it was the one that got the most looks, if not comments, from the lifties this trip. But looking back to more traditional all mountain skis, I was looking forward to getting back on the Moment Commander 92, which I had been skiing in CB and wanted to get more time on here. And both Jonathan and I skied that on one of the days here. And I need to stop bringing this up, but we also have a video coming out about that one very soon. So you can catch that soon on the Blister YouTube channel because we work really hard on those.
No,
so
Luke, check it out. Bringing it up. God damn it, everybody. We do work really hard on these things. Go watch all of them.
And it's
right
a good
now.
Video.
Turn this podcast off. No, just kidding. Don't do that.
Yeah. If we have it out by then, sure. The current commanders for this season are, I think, some of Moment's most traditionally directional, especially the 92, like front side oriented skis. And it shows, like, I think the Commander 92 is the best carving ski that I have tried from Moment. And in addition to that, I still enjoy it off of groomers. It is kind of like that Kesley MX88 I mentioned, a ski that rewards a technique that kind of addresses what it is. It's a ski that is not very tapered, does not have very much rocker. It's pretty stiff. It's not super light. So you do have to ski it with all those factors in mind. But if you do, like, we still had a blast on it on Kachina.
Yeah.
I very much enjoyed it. And I think it is not only is it a competitive option in that directional, narrower all mountain category, but it's a fun one for people who want, especially like a slight, like within that niche category, a slightly more energetic and nimble ski, comparing it to skis that are often even less rockered and often heavier. Jonathan, your thoughts?
I'm liking this Commander 92 a lot. And, I'm on record, I think, like, previous iterations of the Commanders were not my favorites. I still need to get more time on the Commander 102, but this Commander 92 is quickly working its way up my own personal ranks. And it was like a perfect ski for Kachina today, I think. We were skiing pretty good chalk. And I want to talk, since you're, well, this is my cheat. This is a segue because I wanted to talk about the Moment Commander 92, but I've also been skiing the updated Nordica Enforcer 94 and then the Blizzard Anomaly 94. These three skis really do belong in the same comparison group. And it's really kind of fun when we get to do this. Like, lots of similarities overall, I'd say family resemblance among those three skis. That one of the biggest things that stands out to me is there is a bit more tail rocker on that Commander 92. And if you are in steep techie zones, I think that just a little bit more willingness or ease of smearing that tail around when you want it to, but then to let that ski get on edge also when you want it to, and when you want to ski it hard through moguled up terrain or whatever, it's there for you. It is a stable ski. I think that Anomaly 94, quick take on that, for those of you who love the bona fide, you need to look at this ski. That Anomaly 94 so far will start teasing out differences. I mean, the bona fide, the Blizzard bona fide had a number of iterations of it, right? But for people who love that bona fide, you should be looking at and demoing the Anomaly 94 for sure. There's a lot of similarity there. More like, I would actually say more similarity than difference. If we're just speaking kind of grossly for a minute, go look at that ski. And frankly, I'm not going to lie, I did not get on that Anomaly 94 in Crested Butte. We've had it for a little while. I just was like, okay, what did they do here? Is it a lighter, easier going ski that's maybe not really my own personal cup of tea? I'm going to let Luke or Dylan, people who like skis like that, I'm going to let you all handle that. I was wrong. This is very much in that category of a burlier, stable ski, like a Moment Commander 92. And then, look at how I'm segueing, let's talk about the new or updated Nordica Enforcer 94. I was a very big fan of the Nordica Enforcer 93. I skied that ski. I remember reviewing it here in Taos. Then they updated that to the Nordica Enforcer 94. Was not a fan of that ski. I thought they went, it was too much of a 2x4. Too stiff. It felt like it lost its suspension. I thought they sort of took a step back from the Nordic Enforcer 93. So fast forward to today, we're skiing the new Nordica Enforcer 94. This is a better iteration of the previous Nordica Enforcer 94. I'm willing to say that pretty categorically, not caveated like, well, if you weigh 250 pounds, I think this ski is a lot more dialed than the last iteration of it. And we were ripping groomers on, you know, we were ripping groomers and I was on this thing. We were skiing Zadarsky and the steeps of Taos. I was perfectly comfortable on this ski all day long on everything that we were throwing at it. And I would not have said that about the last iteration of this ski. So I'm really happy to be able to say that I think Nordica is back on track and that Nordica Enforcer 94 is back to being a ski that I will be eager to recommend to, you know, again, we'll do our full review and tease it all out. But there's a new segment of skier who I think should be considering this. And that's exciting.
Yeah. And I think it's worth pointing out that we have the 179 centimeter Enforcer 94, the 24-25 model. The previous generation, we tested in both a 186 and a 179. And I think I'm safe to say that what you just said applies to both
the
previous lengths.
That's right. Yep. So yeah, for the previous iteration, to be clear, I felt the same way about the 179 and the 186. I felt they went too planky, too stiff, too 2x4-ish, not versatile. And this 179 Nordic Enforcer 94 that I just skied today, that versatility is back. It's a nice ski.
Mm-hmm.
Kristen?
Yeah, just kind of a side note on that. I actually was watching you ski down Zadarsky, and those were some of the best turns I've ever seen you make.
I sort of want to say thank you, but I also want to be mad at you for that somehow.
No, I'm not.
So
I'm
you
not
skied it so much worse in the past.
Damn it.
No.
Damn
thanks,
it.
Thanks. Take a compliment and turn it around. No, it was noticeable. Like I see all of you ski and you guys are all great skiers, but there was something about the way you skied Zadarsky today. Is that like, I think it was the last run. And I was like, wow, Jonathan looks really good and fluid on this. Especially for like tired legs and everything. But while you were saying this about the skis, I'm like, oh, this is interesting because I definitely noticed that.
I still like to, you know, I like to have this image in my head where I just am skiing beautifully all of the time. But no, I mean, I think that ego aside, I mean, that's great, Kristen. Like, I think that does make the point. I mean, one, I just love that run, but that isn't the simple, it's not the hardest run in the world or anything, but like, you need to be precise and things come up at you. And I guess it does kind of make the point like, and then like, oh, and then we're just ripping groomers on those things too. And so as much as I loved that I can't believe this was something like 6 years ago, right? But thinking about that Enforcer 93 that I thought was such a good ski, and I was so bummed with that update, I'm really psyched to see what Nordica has done with this latest iteration. So
yeah, we've got a lot more to say about both the new Enforcers and the new Santa Anas, which we've also been skiing.
Well, kids,
bedtime.
Can you guys please get out of our beds now? For the record, we are not in those
beds. Yeah, I was going to say.
The chairs, the boys are sitting on the beds.
Yeah, we somehow got the comfy beds, but that was a longer one. Shout out to anybody who made it to the end of this one. I am curious how many people turned it off during.
It's just Matt Manzer, because he's the only other person used to talking to you for this long.
I don't know what the secret signal is. If you somehow haven't
peaches.
That's right. Peaches. If you made it this far, either on the Blister website for the episode page on the website, in the comments, just write peaches and then we'll know you're a real one, or that we should pray for you. One of the two. Or you can do that on, you know, the Instagram post when we put that up. But the word is, if you made it to the end, peaches. And we're not going to explain why that's the word, but it is the word. Wait, one more thing. Crashes and close calls. We're talking about, you know, we're talking a lot these days about Blister Plus and our Blister Plus membership. And, you know, sometimes we're talking about some pretty gnarly crash stories. But, you know, there is a corresponding injury insurance. And I'm going to just share mine from, was that yesterday? No, that was Monday. It was Monday.
Oh, well, it depends on which one we're talking about.
Yeah, there was another incident today. The incident from today, there's, I think, going to be a video that we'll be able to share that J-Bob got. But on Monday, it's in the morning, we're skiing our groomers. And this is 100% my fault, but you know, we are often reviewing our skis. We put demo bindings on them so that we can adjust to different boot sole lengths and that we can check skis at different mount points. Well, we were kind of rushing to get a post up Monday morning, and then we're flying out to go meet Kara and Kristen. I don't click in solidly into place one of the my heel piece on my right ski. And so actually what the kind of the scarier part about this, I think my first lap maybe was Reforma.
We skied a fair bit before.
We skied
incident.
A fair bit. And like, man, if let's just say if a ski were to fly off on Reforma, there's a decent chance you're hitting like a tree real hard. We skied Reforma. Maybe we skied another. Did we do a West Basin? Dear Lord. Holy cow. So we then did a West Basin lap, and then we were shooting a groomer, and Kara had the camera. I was deep in the belly of a left-hand carve, and all of a sudden could just feel my right ski disconnecting from my boot. So I stand up on my left ski, kind of immediately get whipped around, and now I'm mobbing fairly quickly, switch on one ski. And honestly, in my head, I'm just like, holy shit, like, don't blow, like, you're gonna blow your knee out. Like, if I catch a downhill edge, I'm gonna blow my knee. And I'm like, don't blow your knee, don't blow your knee. And then I was like riding it out for quite a while. And I'm like, then I went to like, I'm totally gonna pull this off. The 1 foot switch skiing. Kara wants to jump in here, but you take it from here.
No, all I'm going to say is Jonathan's instincts were beautiful. It was a beautiful save. At one point, I saw him skiing switch on one ski very fast, and then he like very smoothly whipped it around and knew he was going to fall and fell pretty gracefully, at which point I took the camera off of him because I was too scared to watch what happened.
But I did slam my head pretty hard. Also, like, wear your helmet
and get a new helmet, because after you watch the or listen to the podcast about helmets and collisions and concussions, if you have a hit like that, get a new helmet.
And
that's
so
on the Blister YouTube channel.
And so, yeah, honestly, like, to use crappy, you know, terminology, like, yeah, my bell was rung. It didn't feel that crazy. And honestly, I was so worried that I was going to blow a knee that ended up hitting my head hard, did have a helmet on, you know, got collected. And, you know, turns out we kept skiing the rest of the day, had a tiny, tiny headache. But no big deal. My neck is quite sore, but I haven't felt it at all skiing. And my right ribs are really sore, which I don't even remember. I don't even remember, like, maybe I just caught like my hand or ski pole or something. Anyway, like, stuff happens out on the mountain. And it's just a good reminder. We weren't doing some of the techier, gnarlier stuff in West Basin. We were on like a blue groomer, right? So people, this stuff happens. We just want you to be covered. The big ask here, but also the great advice, the best advice I can give you, go look to see what your actual insurance situation is. Go look at your insurance card. What is your deductible and what is your max out of pocket? If I had blown my knee, I would have been covered up to $25,000 worth of injury insurance, medical coverage for this accident. I am extremely lucky and grateful that I didn't blow my knee. What would happen if you did in a situation like mine? What would you be on the hook for? We're just asking everybody to get clear on their situation. And if you don't have any health insurance, Blister Plus works whether you have health insurance or not. So we will include a link in the show notes of this. We care about this. It matters to us. Some of you who pay close attention to Blister will know why. There are some very recent examples why this matters to us a whole lot. And anyway, we just want to continue on our mission to change the culture of outdoor sports, where we are out doing relatively risky things, and many of us are underinsured. We got a way to solve that. All right. I'm going to get off my soapbox, but seriously, go look at your insurance card. Go see what your deductible is and what your max out of pocket is. And I'm going to stop talking and I'm going to let everybody go to bed.
I think just to put this into perspective, we talk about a lot about the kind of freak accident instances like this one, but when that happened and Kara radioed me that Jonathan just had a bad crash, I remembered that I had crashed on the exact same groomer about 6 years ago, about a few hundred yards down, but same exact situation, a very mellow groomer. And I think that put a fitting spin on that, that, like, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been 6 years and we still can't turn right on that section of a groomer.
Well, for me, it's just being, oh my God, it's so stupid.
I guess you were turning left.
I was turning left. I just hadn't bothered to actually lock down the heel piece.
Yeah, I was just bad at carving.
How that stayed on for Reform and West Basin, I have no idea.
There are no snow snakes on Reform and West Basin, but Lord Totemoffs has a lot of snow snakes.
Everybody, we're going to let you go. Hey, thanks for listening to all this. And I hope you thought it was fun. Hopefully you thought it was a little informative. And yeah, thanks for hearing us talk about how we're happy to be back at a ski area that we're really big fans of and where this whole Blister thing started and where I first met Kara and where I first started skiing with Kristen. And Luke, I don't have any cool stories about you other than
you didn't take me on Kachina.
Oh yeah, how I wouldn't take you on Kachina. Yeah. You guys are all the best. Thanks for listening and we will talk to you again real soon.
Peaches.
Thanks, Peaches.
Peaches.
Well, as we said, if you made it to the end, you're a real one. Thanks for sticking with us. It was a fun week with the team, with tons of gear testing along the way. Thanks so much to the staff at the Blake and to Taos Ski Valley for having us. Thanks so much to Kristen, Luke, and Jonathan for joining me on this episode. And thanks, of course, to Justin Bob for producing this episode. And I'm really happy to say we finally got some solid shred time together this week. Thanks also to all of you for tuning in. We'll talk to you again real soon. Cheers.